And I actually left the region much more encouraged than I've been in quite a while regarding North Korea.
A member of Congress is encouraged about East Asia. It's Friday, July 28th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us too on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, elderly U.S. immigrants encounter unique issues. China's growing love for fast cars. On the road with Indonesian food, high-tech wheelchairs, and hiding the sun. Stay with us. We're just getting started on VOA Asia. The Trump administration has been looking to China to help rein in neighboring North Korea following several missile tests, including a possible intercontinental ballistic missile on July 4th and its continued nuclear advancement. Recently, a U.S. congressional delegation went to China and Japan to discuss North Korea, along with trade issues, as President Trump seeks new deals to reduce long-standing imbalances. Utah Republican Chris Stewart has recently returned from that trip and shares his thoughts with VOA Mandarin reporter Peggy Chong.
From my perspective, because I sit on the House Intelligence Committee, we wanted to talk about some of the intel issues as well, particularly, no surprise, North Korea. Things have settled down there a little bit. But this is, three weeks or a month ago, and of course it was very, very intense at that moment. And we wanted to see, you know, if China was willing to help us in ways they hadn't been in the past, Japan as well. And I actually left the region much more encouraged than I've been in quite a while regarding North Korea.
You were a former Air Force pilot. Yeah. How do you think that the U.S. should handle this crisis?
Well, I tell you what hasn't worked, and that is this idea of strategic patience. You know, that goes back to when I was in the military in the 1990s. You know, it started with President Clinton. It went through President Bush and President Obama. And our objective has always been two things, to stop North Korean missile program and to stop their nuclear program. And if that's been our objective, then very clearly this policy has failed because we haven't done either one. But President Trump has said, and I think he's exactly right in this, he says we will not allow North Korea to have nuclear-tipped ICBMs that are able to reach the United States. And it wouldn't be just one city. It would be dozens of cities that they could threaten. And so once again, if you'd asked me a year ago, can we stop that from happening, I don't know that I would have been able to say yes. But I'm much more encouraged now than I've been in the past. China is engaging in ways they haven't. The very senior Chinese leadership has said, we recognize that we can be more assertive and play a more positive role in this. Japan as well, all of the allies in the region, even the Philippines, who a year ago seemed to be turning entirely towards China, even they are taking a step back. And I think there's a coalition building there that we can actually maybe, you know, change their trajectory and have a good outcome for us.
Back to trade. I know that during this visit, Senator Deng's hand carry for Montana steak to Chinese Premier Li Keqiang to underscore the importance of opening Chinese market to U.S. beef. What was the interaction like?
It was actually really, really quite pleasant. It was fun. And it was kind of funny. You know, it's hard to get frozen steaks from Washington, D.C. to Beijing and keep them frozen. It was kind of a challenge. But I think he was a little surprised. But it was a good, you know, symbology of, you know, we have this great U.S. beef. Senator Daines, of course, is from Montana. He kind of kids around saying there's three times as many cows in his district than there are people. But it's an important issue for not just, you know, people in Montana, people in Utah, people throughout the West. But, you know, the beef industry is an enormous industry in the country, and China's an enormous market. That market has been closed to us up to this point. And it's a real positive step forward for China to open the markets for us on beef.
So U.S. and China has reached a trade deal after the visit that the Chinese will open markets for U.S. beef, financial services, and natural gas. And also the American market will be open to Chinese cooked chicken.
Yeah.
What does this trade deal mean for your constituents?
Well, as you know, looking at rural Utah, for example, where we have thousands and thousands of ranchers. I grew up ranching and you know, milking cows and raising beef. And it's a big deal for my district. It's a big deal for the West generally. It's really a win-win. It's a positive thing for the Chinese people. It's a positive thing for the American people. We have closer ties. We have closer economic relationships. Chinese people get to have our great American beef. And again, I think it's kind of a win-win for everyone.
So far, what is your reaction to President Trump's handling with U.S.-China relations?
I think it's actually been quite positive. You know, he had Premier Xi down to Mar-a-Lago. They apparently had some great meetings down there. They seem to have developed a friendship. When I was in China, we were greeted very warmly. It was actually the same weekend that the president had his meetings. And their response to it was really quite positive. And I think that helped move things forward in a lot of different areas in ways that we've talked about here today. I think it engages them more in the challenge of North Korea. It engaged them more in free trade and opening up markets between the two of us. And it's so important for us to have a good relationship with China. I mean, we've been concerned with some of their activities in the South China Sea, some of those things over the last few years. But we're more able to engage and to change the outcome of those stresses between us if the president and the Chinese leadership have a good relationship.
U.S. House of Representatives member Chris Stewart, our thanks to the Republican from Utah for speaking with VOA and to Mandarin reporter Peggy Chang. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. In big win for Modi, Indian state leader teams up with his ruling BJP. Four of six Japanese nationals detained in China are freed. In South Korea, ex-Pak aide, culture minister, sentenced in blacklisting artists. Myanmar lawmakers to open discussion of critical UN rights report. North Korean development and shortages go hand in hand. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. As the U.S. population over 65 increases at a rapid pace, a growing share is made up of foreign-born residents. In cities like New York, the immigrant population is expected to make up a majority of seniors by 2020. From New York, Ramon Taylor tells us the culturally appropriate services they need and are having a hard time keeping up.
At the Desi Senior Center, elderly Bangladeshis can socialize, pray, eat halal food, and exercise 3 days a week. Bangladeshis are among the more recently settled immigrant populations in the country, and for them, the English language can be a significant barrier, especially for seniors.
When I first came, I didn't know any English, and still now. When I go to bed, I am thinking how I'm going outside the next day, how to communicate with people.
Christian Gonzalez Rivera, senior researcher at Center for an Urban Future, says social isolation is common among seniors from these immigrant groups, especially if cultural and linguistically appropriate services are sparse.
Very often, you will find older people who feel isolated because their grandchildren don't speak their language. They're immersed in a culture that is very foreign from their own. Their role as an older person may be different in the United States than it was back in their own home country.
India Home, a secular South Asian organization which runs Desi Senior Center and a number of programs at existing senior centers, confronts social isolation in all its forms. These include elders who live with their families, many of whom do not qualify for Social Security or other federal benefits.
Our people are more conservative and more religious and family-oriented. So they want to be with the family, but it's very hard to be with the family nowadays because the children, they brought them here, maybe son or daughter, maybe they are in poverty line also.
But social isolation is common even among well-established seniors like the Shahs, who immigrated from India 25 years ago and became American citizens. Bharat says he gained confidence by participating and leading India Home classes.
You have to develop yourself, how to talk, how to behave with other people, how to keep them busy, what work we have to give, how to entertain them. So this gives them more opportunity to show your talent to others.
The Shahs say the key to maintaining their happiness is their health and staying busy. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
Duty. Happening now in Asia, China released four of six Japanese nationals detained since March. China's foreign ministry said the men were being held on suspicion of engaging in illegal activities, but gave no specific details. At least five Japanese nationals have been arrested in China since 2015 on suspicion of spying. Staying up to date with VOA, you're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. After co-sponsoring the seventh running of the three-nation two-week-long Silk Way Rally, as well as hosting the Shanghai Grand Prix Formula One race circuit since 2004, along with local car rallies, China is showing a growing interest in motorsports. The China Passenger Car Association said car sales last year in China approached 24 million. That's nearly a 15% increase over 2015, making China the world's top car market. Despite urban pollution and traffic congestion, Eric Harwit, professor of Asia Studies at the East-West Institute in Hawaii and who follows the Chinese car market, tells VOA's Victor Beatty motorsports has followed a natural progression for China.
They've become a society that wants to use their cars not just for commuting, but to go out in the countryside, to have picnics, to travel around the country, or maybe even outside of the country. And now this is the next step, to use cars for motorsports and to enjoy watching people racing cars, see how fast they can go. The element of speed comes into their love of sports. So this is just kind of a natural progression, I think, from people who, as you said, 30 years ago were riding bicycles, or if they had a car, it was maybe a very old Chinese domestically made vehicle. Now they're able to see the latest sports cars zooming around modern tracks built in their own country.
Are these Chinese-made cars, or are they vehicles from all over the world?
The race cars would be vehicles from all over the world. I don't think the Chinese domestic makers are quite up to that level where they can manufacture the cutting-edge race cars. So I think it's the Toyotas and the Hondas and Fords and other vehicle producers, Ferraris, from around the world that are actually making the vehicles that the Chinese are watching.
Well, you've got hundreds of local car rallies going on, motocross events, touring car championships. You even got this two-week-long Silkway Odyssey across the desert. They're getting in quite a few different sporting events in the car racing industry.
Especially, as you say, this international race is really something that piques people's interest. The Chinese are very curious about foreign countries, so when they get to see cars traveling across Russia and Kazakhstan and various other countries in Central Asia, in their own far west, they not only see the excitement of the racing, but they also have a chance to maybe learn a little bit about those other cultures where the cars are passing through.
Is this happening all across the country? We know that there's a real air pollution problem in some of China's bigger cities.
China has limited real estate, so many of these race tracks will be built out in the countryside. So in areas where I think there's less pollution.
How does the Chinese Communist Party, which of course controls much of the life in China, look at growing interest in overseas foreign sports like basketball, U.S.-style football, and now motor car racing?
Well, the Chinese want to be a global power, not just in the economy, not just, I guess many would say, in the military, but also they want to be a sports power. So if they want to compete at the Olympics, if they want to be seen as national champions in the kind of things that people follow, which is in many cases sports, then they have to be players.
Eric Harwit said he expects world-ranked Chinese race car drivers in the next 5 to 10 years. Both popular writer, blogger, and film director Han Han and actor Jimmy Lin are race car drivers. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
The This news alert from VOA Asia. South Korean police are attempting to determine if Lim Ji-hyun was kidnapped in April when she traveled from Seoul to China and then disappeared. She had defected from North Korea, became a TV personality in the South, and then, quote, returned home to the communist state 3 years later. This story and more are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia. You know, our VOA Asia Facebook page is a great place to visit often, and we hope you like it. In addition to interesting news and features to see and share, we often go live with interesting stories of Asian life here in the United States. Many people who come here bring their passion for food, and some even share it with the public. Triana Dewi and her husband run an Indonesian food truck in Washington, D.C. VOA Asia's Ali Ogden went out to find out what it's like to run a food truck and which Indonesian dishes tend to be the most popular with D.C.'s downtown crowd.
Tell me, what are your most popular dishes?
This is Indonesian truck, and our most popular dish is what they call beef rendang. So basically, slow-cooked meat and a coconut milk, chili, ginger, lime leaf, galanga, cinnamon, and what else? Some garlic and cook for a long time, so low and slow.
Sounds amazing. I heard coconut, I heard slow-cooked beef, I heard chili, and galanga. Now, I don't know what galanga is. Can you?
Galanga is like a root vegetable in the ginger family, but the taste is bitter than ginger.
Okay. Why did you decide to name your truck galanga?
This dish, which is galanga fried chicken. Okay. Yeah, that's one of my favorite dishes, you know, so that's why, I mean, I kind of lean toward that name.
What do you love about running a food truck?
Well, the flexibility to go anywhere, you know, that you can take off whenever you want, you know, and it's profitable, you know.
Are you cooking things in the morning before you guys get out here?
Yes, we do. We cook like in our commissary or kitchen, commercial kitchen. Then we prep everything and we take it to the truck.
Okay.
And we wait for the right temperature to serve, because in a food truck, it's not practical to cook everything in the truck.
So how many customers on average are you all getting during the day?
Well, between 50 to 90 a day. Yeah.
A lot. And yeah. And is this, so this spot here in front of the nation's capital, is this, I assume, is one of the hot spots, right?
It is. It is. I mean, there is a lot of spots in D.C. that are really good, like 17NK, 13NK, Union Station.
Okay.
So actually we work majority of the time around government buildings, so there isn't a lot of, restaurants or food, stores, so that's why, the city, they give us the licenses to vend around them,
Okay. So is it hard to get a license to run the food truck
here? It takes like a year or so, almost a year.
So on average, like, what would you say, what kind of sales can you do in a year on average running this food truck here in downtown Washington, D.C.?
70 to 100. The first years, no, it didn't reach that one, because, the time that we opened January, we start really selling like around March or so.
Very good.
Yes. The weather element, that's also one of the toughest that we have to face.
Sure.
Like summertime, it's really hot.
Really hot.
Wintertime, it's cold.
Yeah.
So spring, like from late March to early June, that's the best time. The weather is perfect. And September, October also until like Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Then after that, kind of slowing down a little bit.
Not too bad today, right?
No, not too bad. Last year, the heat index reached 105, but inside the truck is like sauna, probably 115. So, yeah.
A good way to lose weight.
Yes, and also it's like, it's good for the skin, like it cleans the pore and everything. Although you don't really look nice.
So good beauty tip for our listeners out there. If you want to lose some weight and have nice skin, just come into work in a food truck where it's really, really hot.
Well, hopefully it's cooler where you are. See Ali Ogden's full Indonesian food truck culinary adventure at VOA Asia Facebook. Developing at this hour in Asia, Thai school children and naval officers have sent over 1,000 turtles home to the sea in a ceremony aimed at bringing good fortune to the country's new king. He turned 65 today. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, sometimes it's the simplest ideas that can have the biggest impact. When it comes to wheelchair technology, any advances are welcome. But VOA's Kevin Enoch shares one simple idea that may forever change the way wheelchairs work.
Maneuvering a wheelchair is simply a matter of turning one of the large push wheels while slowing the other, a bit like rowing a boat.
Conventional wheelchairs, they basically work no different than shopping carts. They got casters that can rotate in every direction, and then this is great for certain things, not so great for others.
But with one simple fix, turning becomes a much simpler and intuitive affair.
So in this one, one can lock these caster wheels in a straight position against the steering bar that then is activated by the backrest.
It's called a reagiro, and to turn, users simply lean in the direction they want to go.
It works like a brake cable on a bike, except that it's not only pulling but also pushing, and that's how the rotation of the backrest gets translated in a rotation of the front wheels.
It's a simple idea, and the chair's developer has filed a patent on the design and is looking for investors to help get it on the market. Kevin Enoch, VOA News.
In less than a month, on August 21st, people in many parts of the United States will be able to enjoy a rare visual spectacle, a total eclipse of the sun. Although the moon passes between the sun and our planet relatively often, VOA's George Pudich reports a total eclipse is visible only occasionally and only in some parts of the globe.
If the moon goes around the Earth once a day, why are solar eclipses so rare?
The moon doesn't actually orbit in the same plane as the Earth is orbiting around the sun. In fact, it is slightly inclined, approximately 5 degrees. And so what that means is sometimes the moon is a little bit above the Earth when it casts its shadow, and sometimes it's a little bit below the Earth when it casts its shadow. But then every so often, it actually lines up just perfectly, and the shadow is cast on the Earth, giving us a partial and sometimes a total solar eclipse.
The moon covers only about a half a degree of the entire sky, so its shadow has two parts, the umbra, where the total eclipse can be seen, and the penumbra, on both sides of umbra, where the eclipse is only partial. This umbra will be about 112 kilometers wide and will travel across the U.S. at approximately 2,400 kilometers per hour, giving between 2 and 7 minutes of observation. Scientists are excited about this rare opportunity to study the sun's corona, the aura of plasma that surrounds our star.
It's not very bright, so we usually can't see it, but during a total solar eclipse, we can. And this is where all sorts of dynamics, magnetic explosions occur. The corona is incredibly hot, and we don't understand why that is. It's what I study. And so we want to understand all of these dynamics that are going on in the sun, because the sun, of course, affects us here at Earth, and it affects all of the planets in the solar system.
Everyone in North America, Central America, and a good portion of South America will be able to see at least a partial solar eclipse. The safest way to look at it is by using special safety glasses, as even the darkest sunglasses are not safe. The other way is to create a simple pinhole camera from a cardboard box. Cut out two windows on one side and a larger one on the opposite side. Cover one window with a piece of aluminum foil and make a pinhole in its center. Cover the bottom with a piece of white paper. Let the sun shine directly on the pinhole and look into the box through the other window. If there are no clouds, the view will be stunningly spectacular. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
No matter if it's light or dark, You can always listen to VOA Asia, and we thank you for joining us today. We are also happy to have our friends from the University of the Philippines in Diliman listening on 1602 AM Radio DZUP. Thanks for joining us today. Our thanks, too, to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Carl Starling, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Bird as well, part of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.